Ralph's got something quickly to say, and then we're going to go to Chris. It's going to impinge a little bit on your lunch time, but we've got lots of time for lunch. We've got till 2 o'clock to get back to the next session here and everywhere else. So we're going to override a little bit of time into lunch. Ralph Schoenemann.
Yes, thank you, Ian. thanks, brothers and sisters. I admire very much the work that Webster has done and is doing, and we collaborate. But I have to say to you, frankly, that I think it's effective for us to project overly about the oil bourse as a casus belli. I have to take my distance from that. I'm sorry.
That mic's not working. That's for the camera.
Okay. In brief, I would point you to a couple of shows that we did on Taking Aim on this subject, because we have to bear in mind that both the Zionist state and imperialism in particular have targeted Iraq and Iran for 40 years. I mean, every major administration since 1964 has projected plans for seizing Arab oil, and the process through which the Iranian Revolution and the Iraqi Revolution have been targeted. We go back to 1958, and of course, even before that, with respect to the installation of the Shah in 52. It's an ongoing targeting of these societies, both for the subjugation of their working class and the seizure of their resources. Briefly, I'd point you to a piece by F. William Endall, Global Research, and Michelle Chasadovsky, "No, the Iran Oil Bourse is Not a Casus Belli," and the work of Paul Craig Roberts, who writes on antiwar.com and is a former economist for Reagan, by the way. Pardon me?
Treasury,
yes, exactly. You see, I think if we overdetermine these things in specifics, the nature of the dominance of the dollar and its hegemony in currency is a function of the state power of U.S. imperialism. The euro and the formation of the euro in the European market was something that U.S. imperialism was pushing for and supporting and sustaining, so far from it perceiving it as a threat. On the contrary, it's a device for undermining the capacity of working people in each of the respective European states to challenge their particular ruling classes. It's a form of concentration of the power of the ruling class throughout Europe. We could address that. But just briefly on this, Engdahl says the argument fails to convince for a number of reasons. The foreign dollar holders began dumping their dollars as a protest of the foreign policies of the Carter administration. But in order for the euro to begin to challenge the reserve role of the U.S. dollar, a virtual revolution in policy would have to take place in Euroland. There's no remote evidence of this. It would have to turn on the euro printing presses and print euros like there was no tomorrow. And that's because the current size of the publicly traded Euroland government bond market is tiny in comparison with huge U.S. Treasury markets. It's not a question of in which currency a particular commodity is traded in. It's a question of the hegemony of the state power that controls. The U.S. could print endless quantities of dollars to pay for foreign imports of Toyotas, Hondas, and BMWs. It's a whole, I just point you to this for a very particular reason. Neither the tactical and tentative formation of an oil bourse in euros, whether by Saddam or by the Iranian government, has any bearing on U.S. imperial design to seize those countries and to instigate preemptive war. Oil is billed in dollars, Craig Roberts writes, because the dollar is the world reserve currency. The dollar is not the reserve currency because oil is billed in dollars. The U.S. is abusing the dollar's role as a reserve currency, and when a trusted alternative occurs, the dollar is likely to lose its reserve currency role, but Iran cannot remotely initiate or affect that transition. This should not, because frankly, what happens to us at times is that the pretext rationale is that the ruling class itself advances, we take at face value, and I think it's a mistake to do that. The Japanese and the Chinese and the Saudis hold vast quantities of dollars in reserve. They hold it because they are dependent, they shelter under the counter-revolutionary shield of U.S. imperialism, every one of these ruling classes, and for that matter, brothers and sisters, I was in Iran for 8 months during the struggle against the Shah. Let me tell you, these mullahs hijacked that revolution. They are constantly an overture to American imperialism. They were brought into power with help of the CIA when Brzezinski set Iraq upon Iran. It was the Mossad who was helping the Iranians while the U.S. was helping the Iraqis. These ruling groups have a relationship to U.S. imperialism. It's the population that's targeted. It's the resources that are targeted. And we have to see that within its proper class context. Otherwise, I think we get mesmerized by the devices of the rulers themselves. Why don't the Japanese and the Chinese and the Saudis dump their treasuries instead of sustaining deficit-financed U.S. imperialism? Because they need it, they depend upon it, they look to it, they trade upon it. And also, what do you do if you dump all your currency holdings in treasury notes? If you dump them, all of a sudden, everything you're holding is dropping in value. Their own economies are hostage to this relationship to U.S. imperialism. You can't just dump dollars and treasury notes without undermining the value of all your holdings. You know, suddenly the bottom falls out. What happens to your own economy? They're intimately interrelated. U.S. imperialism has hegemony. These are dependent ruling classes. They repress their own populations. They ultimately depend on U.S. state power to intervene on their behalf with its death squads and its terror squads and its U.S. state terror. We have to be clear about the class nature of this and how capitalism in the U.S. is the central engine, not only of state terror, but of the preservation of this decadent system. It will implode. I'm with Webster completely about the instability of the economy. It's smoke and opium, this stuff. It's deficit financing. It's fictive capital. There's no real productive force anymore in this economy. It's all waste capital. It's all dependent on the merchants of death. It's all speculations on speculations. That system will implode, but not because Ahmadinejad toys with an oil bourse that is vanishing in little impact.
Sir, we're waiting for another speaker.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I didn't want to do that much. Yeah. I apologize for that, but I just wanted to point you in that direction.
Thank you.
Thank you.